Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. How well do you think you know yourself? Have you ever wondered what makes you and those around you tick? Why you want and need the things you do? What you fear and why you fear it? Some say that life is a game, and the happiest and most successful players are those who make the effort to understand themselves and those around them. Understanding you is an important aspect of your personal growth and development. And understanding others is critical in creating and nurturing successful relationships. There are many tools to help us achieve this: astrology, numerology, human design, and the gene keys. But the one we're going to be exploring today is the Enneagram. Anne Gadd is a holistic therapist, journalist, artist, and the author of 35 fiction and non-fiction books on art, creativity, healing, self-help, and the Enneagram, a personality typing tool that categorizes us into 9 different types based on our core motivations and fears. An accredited Enneagram practitioner, Anne's books on this subject include The Enneagram of Eating, Sex, and the Enneagram, and the one we'll be discussing most today, Better Parenting with the Enneagram, 9 types of children and 9 types of parents, in which Anne shares how to use the Enneagram for more harmonious relationships with your children. Anne Gadd, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
So, of course, creating better relationships with our children is a high priority for most parents, but I'm sure our viewers will also agree that we can't let you leave this show without hearing a little bit about how our personality types influence 2 of the other great pleasures in life, eating and sex. So I hope you're willing to let us delve a little bit into that later in the show.
Absolutely.
Good, good. So, before we talk about better parenting with the Enneagram, tell us first, what is it?
The actual word means Enneagram, 9, gram, as in logo, basically. So there are 9 points or 9 personalities in the personality aspect of the Enneagram. But I want to emphasize that the Enneagram is more than just the personalities. That is an aspect of it, and obviously because it's personalities, it's what's become the most popular. But there is more to it than that.
Why nine?
Because if you look at the actual symbol, there's a triangle, right? Which goes into a lot of, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, you know, if you look at all the religions, there's normally an element of 3 in them. And then the circle would be wholeness, and then Gurdjieff's law of 7. So there's a lot of mathematics, and there's a lot of deep, even in just the symbol, because originally the Enneagram was just the symbol. It wasn't, the personalities were only came about towards the end of the last century. So it never started out as a personality profiling system. That only came much later. What it does really is it describes our responses to certain fixations. So one could say the boxes are based normally on fear that we create in order to feel safe in the world. And we do it 9 different ways.
9 different ways. I've heard that it's actually an ancient tool. How far back does it go?
The actual symbol, as I say, goes right back, I believe, to the early Greeks and so on, but and even Socrates, I think. But the Enneagram of personalities, Oscar Chazo, and he went into the desert in about the 1960s, and he only came up with 4 different words to describe each personality. And then it was Claudio Naranjo, who was a psychiatrist, who then developed those. And he recognized that those words related to certain psychological profiles that he obviously was working on, because that was what his job was. So he then expanded those four words. And obviously then his pupils and Don Riso, and you know, then it expanded as more and more information came to light. So the symbol is ancient. What we are talking about today is probably from the 1960s.
Are these types fixed, or do we change as we go through life?
Sadly, they are. We come in as a type, and that remains throughout our lives. The only things that alter are the wings, which are the numbers on either side of us. So if you have five, you could have a six wing or a four wing. Those can vary in intensity. But if you are born a four, you will die a four. That's and with it comes all those lessons, if you like, that you experience, that you grow from, which would be different to those experienced by a one, for instance, a type one.
So unlike astrology and numerology, these, you know, don't rely on our birth dates or our names.
Yeah.
It's completely different. And how we find our type is through a quiz, lots of questions.
That is one way. I'm often skeptical of quizzes. I mean, I use them myself, but to the degree that we know ourselves is to the degree that the quizzes are accurate, because you can only get the answers that you input. So I have found actually drawing on information from one's family, colleagues, friends, and self-reflection is more perhaps some people know straight away. And there's certain types that are much easier to identify. Some types seem to incorporate a lot of behaviors of the different types. So they sometimes battle more. But essentially, we must also realize that we are all types. So all is one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that we've branched off into a particular fixation, which we now have to deal with in this life.
Mm. Yeah, I was looking at a quiz earlier. I was actually taking one. And it occurred to me that, you know, I could answer yes or no, or agree or strongly disagree. You know, I could answer more than once to the same question. I could say, yeah, sometimes that and sometimes that.
Absolutely true. I mean, so many women identify as twos, because the minute they say nurturing and do more for others, I mean, everyone's ticking that box, you know. So the test, despite what many organizations claim, sort of 98% accuracy, I personally don't buy that.
Mm.
Because I know, I mean, I was a workshop junkie. You know, I did astrology courses, numerology courses, crystal clean. I mean, hey, I've done that. But I really realized only working with the Enneagram how little I actually knew myself. That I really didn't know my fixations. I had no idea. I mean, no, you know. So it's tough, the Enneagram, because it really shines a mirror very much on your behavior, and that's not comfortable. It's sometimes why they call it the lazy man's path, because although it's a quick path, because it incorporates very much mind, body and heart, which you have, there's always a weakness in one of the three triads of the Enneagram in one of those areas. So in combining heart, mind and body, we then rise to being healthier aspects of ourselves.
So do you find yourself typing people that you meet at parties or whatever?
No, of course not. I'd never do that. Yeah, look, it's that's what I love about the Enneagram, because, you know, if let's say you go somewhere and someone is behaving in a certain way that other people are finding, maybe yourself are finding offensive, I just say, oh, they're a so-and-so being so-and-so. And then it's not personal.
Yeah.
And then it's just, I understand, I can see the fixation and I can see the battle with that fixation. So then compassion arises. It's then not about making them wrong. And then you truly see, because you know what the wounding is.
Mm. Yeah. So tell me some of the basic characteristics of the nine types and how that translates into parenting styles.
Right. So we'll start off with one. Why not? And the ones are, they're perfectionists. They're improvers. They want to make the world a better place. And they see things as black or white, right or wrong, with no gray area in between. So they're punctual, they're precise, they're detail orientated, they're hardworking, they're responsible. If you take that into a parenting role, they're never going to leave the child waiting outside the school to be collected. They'll attend all the PTA meetings, and you know they'll be really responsible, dedicated parents doing the right things. They expect the children to stick to rules because they stick to rules. And the downside of that style of parenting, because with each side there's the good side and then there's the other side, is that they can become too rigid. There's not enough fun. It's all about homework and getting things done. And so when parents need to look at lightening up a bit, having a bit more fun. Sometimes it's actually okay not to eat a meal every single day at the same time. You know, have fun. Have a picnic in the garden. Do something, you know. Mm. So that's our ones, very briefly. And then twos, I call them the pleasing parents, and twos are the helpers of the world. It's all about the other, and they desperately need to be loved. So all of the things they're doing, it's about winning the affection of the other person. But they don't really want to admit that they're kind of what we call giving to get. And when they reach more integrated levels, then that is so. They are truly the world's nurturer. And they truly love without expecting anything in return. When they're not so healthy, it doesn't work that way. So as a parent, what you're going to get is you're going to get somebody who's extremely nurturing, very supportive. It's all about the child. They're going to love having friends around. They're always going to be cookies waiting for the kids and their friends. That's the kind of environment, which is great. On the downside, they can become too overbearing, too much advice, too overprotective, which doesn't always serve a child. So our successful type three, these are the go-getters of the world. They want to achieve, and what they're really looking for is recognition for their achievement. Hey, you've done a great job. So they're very organized, motivated, driven, goal setting, do all the charts, read all the business books, you know. They make things happen. So as a parent, they can be very inspirational. They can motivate their children to achieve. They'll be the parent standing on the sidelines waving the biggest flag, you know, for the three-year-old crossing the finish line. That's it. And they're very, as I say, organized. The downside of these is that if you have perhaps a child who isn't particularly success motivated, the parent might think of them as being a bit of a failure, and the child may start to feel inadequate because they can't keep up with the incredibly famous, wonderful, brilliant, or whatever parent.
Mm-hmm.
So threes need to learn perhaps to be as opposed to do, be a human being as opposed to a human doing. Take a breath sometime, you know, because they can overwork very easily. Fours are the archetypal artists of the Enneagram. Beauty, aesthetics. They're looking for depth of feeling, huge connection with others on a deep level. They want to make the world a beautiful place. So from a child's point of view, that's great because creativity, quality will be, you know, it'll be great in the family. They can do little creative projects together, and they love that. And they teach their child to really think, well, mostly feel deeply. The negative side to fours is that they can become so entrenched in their feelings that they sort of disappear down a rabbit hole. And that isn't always great for a child. So now we move to our cerebral fives. So fives are, it's all about knowledge is power. So the more I know, the safer I'll be. So they're always researching, finding out data, normally working on some project. They don't do socializing particularly well. So you'll usually find them stuck in a man or woman cave, and they don't like to be disturbed. So they're the guy in the office who always has their door shut, you know, don't disturb me. And time is precious to them. And so from a parental perspective, they often battle when children are little, because small children take up a lot of time, and that's impacting on their, a lot of people who are into birding, they would be fives, you know. So this project that they're working on, which may have nothing to do with the office, will be impacted. And fives struggle with that. On the upside, they'll teach a child independence, because they're very happy to sit with the child and read their book, and the child will read their book.
Mm.
So they teach a child independence. Good with school projects, you know, if you have to build a 1927 ship, they'll be there researching it, doing all the stuff. They can be inclined to take over the project a bit. But yeah, so that's your fives. And then sixes are sort of loyal, dutiful, backbone of society. They are fear types, so they're consciously looking for what could go wrong. So sometimes their anxiety can get to them. So they are the parent when child's going away on camp who packs bags of suntan cream and an extra towel and, you know, some extra medication and this and this and this, because they're trying to foresee every eventuality. But they create a warm, loving home for the child, and they're very, they make very good parents like that, because the child knows that they're there for them. Negative side is that they can become too anxious and too concerned. Well, you can't go ahead and do that because of all the consequences that could happen, which can, to some children particularly, become a bit stifling, maybe. So that's something they have to look out for, to be able to let go of their children. Sevens are the fun types. They're upbeat, they're extroverted, full of ideas, full of vision, go, 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 very energetic. So everyone who's got a seven parent, you know, they're probably the envy of all their friends, because the parents seem such fun. Downside of sevens activity is the fact that they really battle to be present with the child, because let's say they're doing a puzzle. Well, they haven't got halfway through the puzzle and the seven's now bored and thinking about the next activity they could do, or the next one, or they spend the time with the child sitting in the restaurant on their mobiles because they're not here and now. The joy is always an elusive thing somewhere in the future. So that's sevens winning. So eight, you always know an eight. Eights walk into a room. I own the place. This is me. Use the opposition here. Okay. Nobody messes with me. I got this. So they tend to be larger than life. They have very warm, generous souls, but you don't mess with an eight and live to tell the tale. So as parents, you know, they're not going to let you mess with their child. The trouble is this: they want their children to be little versions of themselves, and that doesn't always work. For instance, if you're an eight parent and you have a very sensitive four child, that could be problematic, because eights don't want people to see their vulnerability. So they hide it behind sort of bravado. And sometimes children need to see your vulnerability, yeah. You know. Mm. And then finally, the nines, the nice nines. Nines tend to be very adaptive. They go along to get along. They're easygoing. They're calm. They're chill. Nothing seems to faze them too much. However, a lot of anger gets repressed. So nines fear losing connection with others. So, if you get angry with them, you're going to lose connection. So best bottle up that anger. Keep it, you know. So with kids, they're great because they are naturally unselfconscious and playful. So that's the parent pretending they're a duck waddling down the road, going quack, 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 and actually having a ball. So that's good. What's not always so good about nines is they can zone out or be too accepting of behavior that's not acceptable. So that in a very brief nutshell, and it really was brief, are the different types.
So as you're listing them, I'm going, oh, there's a bit of me, there's a bit of me, there's a bit of me. Is it possible, you said that we're not more than one, but we do have some characteristics perhaps?
Well, if I just give myself as an example, I'm a nine. So if one looks at the Enneagram symbol, I connect directly to a three and a six. So there are aspects of six, which definitely in me, and there's aspects of three definitely in me. And then if you look at as a nine, I have an eight wing and a one wing. So that sort of smorgasbord makes up my personality. And then there's also, whether you're social, sexual, self-preservation, which also flavors it. So although there are nine types, there's any number of variations. So two nines are not going to look the same. There's also the how integrated we are or disintegrated. So there's nine levels that Don Riso and Russ Hudson identified as of health. And that also makes a huge difference because somebody who's in the average level is going to look very different to somebody who's in the less healthy level, for instance, even though they're the same type.
You say that, the numbers, the types, they often say similar things and choose similar careers, etc. I mean, how prevalent is that?
Oh, it's very prevalent. I mean, twos you will generally find in HR, helping on school committees, nurses, they're generally in some industry where they're helping other people. Ones you definitely find often in the clergy, also school teachers, anything where they can feel that they're improving other people, accountants, bookkeeping, because it's detail. Sevens can't stay to a 9-to-5 job. They want freedom. So life skill coaches, lots of them are sevens. Because they don't like to be pinned down. They don't want to lose that sense of freedom. So 9-to-5 ain't going to work for them. Eights are always going to want to be the boss. So you tend to find them as floor managers or starting their own company. They love that challenge. Nines, funny enough, are quite independent, so you'll invariably also find them working from home, but it's also got the comfort factor because there'll be a big farty dog and three cats sleeping all over them while they're working, and it's that feeling of comfort. So threes are going to be in the corporate world where they can shine, where they can get the praise and the bonus and the raise and the position and all the things that the juicy things that they're after. They're not going to find that working from home unless they're into, a major blogger or something like that, and then they're getting that feedback from the outside world. So, a lot of sixes tend to be interior decorators. They could be psychologists. A lot of fours are psychologists. A lot of fours are involved in some way in the creative world. So, Yeah, fives are normally engineering. Five sixes are particularly the engineering or six fives. You know, places where they can use their innovative thinking and all the information they've required in a certain field, you know, to benefit them.
So, I mean, in the book, you explore each of the nine types as children, as preteens, and as teens, and presumably you can give parents a fairly good idea of, you know, how a six child, preteen, teen is likely, you know, to be presenting themselves. You know, what happens when you've got, you know, a parent who is what they are, and then they've got five or six kids, you know, they've really got to work hard to try and, you know, use what they know to support and nurture every single one of them.
Well, for a start, I think understanding themselves is step one, because it starts from you as a parent. It also explains why you have such different relationships with different children. You know, I always hear people saying, but they came from the same parents, they lived in the same house, they, how come all my kids are so different? Well, because they're different types. And if you understand your approach to parenting, that is a huge step. If you understand your strengths and your weaknesses, that's a huge step before you even think about what your children may be or may not be. If you can combine that, if you really have you know, insight into what you feel your child might be, if you combine those two together, as I do in the book, that gives you insight into how your relationship's going to be when it's healthy and how it's going to be when you're both under stress. So it brings an awareness to your parenting, which perhaps might otherwise not have been there. Because, you see, the thing is, we all kind of think our way is the right way. So now you with a partner, and you know what? Their way isn't your way. So it's, of course, it's wrong, naturally. I mean, why, you know, your way's got to be the way because that's the way you were brought up, or for whatever reason. So that in itself just creates conflict amongst parents. So if parents can even understand their different parenting styles, that goes a long way to ironing out those fights between the two of you before the kids are even involved, you know, because one believes the other one is being too lax, or the other one is being too harsh, or not spending enough time with the kids, or over, you know, mollycoddling them, and so on. So it helps to iron out a lot of those disputes between couples.
Yeah, and especially when you understand that, you know, this is that person's type. It's not that they're deliberately being obstructive or whatever. This is just the way that their psyche, the way they move through the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, you understand that your five partner is a more hands-off parent, but it doesn't make them necessarily wrong. It's not that they don't love the child. It's just that it's their nature to be more introverted and withdrawn. So it does help this understanding that there are nine different ways to parent, and none of them is more superior to the other one. Yeah. And all of them come with a gift, and all of them come with areas that perhaps we could examine and work with.
Well, we're going to take a short break now, Anne. We'll be back in a few moments. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is holistic therapist, journalist, artist, and accredited Enneagram practitioner, Anne Gadd. And we're talking about how understanding our Enneagram type can help us understand our approach to eating, dating, relationships, sex, and parenting. We'll be back with more from Anne after this break.
OM Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand. And then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. OM Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be. by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, OWN Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an OWN Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OWN Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OWN Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OWN Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OWN Times' flagship radio show, What Is Going On? And as an author, editor, and 13 times book judge who's read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors, I'm constantly asked what's really worth reading and what's not. So I created the No BS Spiritual Book Club to help you save time and money by picking the brains of discerning names who've walked this path before you. There's no catch, no fees, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library of 10 best spiritual book lists from some of your favourite authors and teachers, plus free book excerpts, audios and video interviews with people like Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., David G., Lee Harris, Mark Nepo and more. From well-known classics to hidden gems you've never heard of, it's the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to enlighten your journey of self-discovery. So why not join the club? Get inspired and save money at the No BS Spiritual Book Club.com.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's one in five daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Angad, how early can we identify the different types in children?
Oh, my most unfavorite question. The reason being is there's a lot of very differing views on this. From my perspective, sometimes you just look at a baby and you can just see that it's already molded into that personality. But I would never want to say it or put a stamp on that child while they're so young, because sometimes children do emulate the behavior of their peers. And, I'm very cautious about identifying children too early. However, from the perspective of one's own observation, if you keep it yourself and you just observe, that, because you see, it's not just them. I've got cats and dogs and animals, and wherever you go, you see that kind of behavior. I've just spent 3 weeks out in the desert. And you could see the way different animals behave as to what types they are. It doesn't just go to humans, it goes to countries and so many different things. We can see these patterns of behavior.
Young children, very often they are, mimicking their parents. So I do wonder how, objective a parent can be who wants to type their child.
It's interesting with the children's books that, the feedback I'm getting from parents is the children self-identify. They can see, that's what I say, that's what I am, which is great, because that form of self-awareness is fantastic. It takes most of us years to get to that point. So I always remember saying, was Rosalind Breyer who used to say it, take the truth and hold it like a little bird in your hand gently so that you're free to let it go when it needs to go. And that's the way I would look at it. So I would say, this child is showing a lot of seven type behavior. But I wouldn't say they are seven, because as you say, they might be emulating parents or friends or anyone. And they probably would have some seven in them, but it might be a wing, or it might be one of the numbers you know, on the lines that move around the Enneagram that they're shifting to. So it could be any of those. But, you know, there, as I say, there are some types, like little fives, you know, they often call them little professors because they want to be on their own and they enjoy sort of being on their own, studying ant farms or doing whatever. So it is sometimes easier to pick up those types and keep it quiet.
Now, you say that there are pairing combinations for each of the possible 81 pairs. So we're looking at one adult, one child, and there's 81 possible combinations there.
Correct.
Wow. And then, of course, if you've got other children, you're dealing with a lot of combinations.
Absolutely. And you're also dealing with stressed and unstressed. So the behavior is going to be very different.
Yeah. 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 So how can we use this to better our parenting?
Number one is to understand ourselves as parents. I think that self-awareness is huge. So that to me is the number one. Number two, if we can understand the fears and issues that are children are dealing with, it helps to make us better parents from the point of view we understand the child. So if you have a four child and they're getting really upset, and instead of just turning around say, oh, get over yourself, we can go and we can put an arm around them and say, I understand this is really hurting you on a very deep level, and just know that I'm here next to you, and let's perhaps talk about this more. You know, it's a very different approach that you might have had otherwise, because you know that person as an individual. And as humans, we all want to be seen. We all want to be understood. And to feel that someone, and if it's a parent, well, that's a big bonus, truly gets you, truly understands you, is a huge benefit.
You said that you'd, you know, you'd looked at astrology, you'd looked at numerology, you've dived into a few of the things. I mean, me too. Do you find that the types alongside, like, you know, if you've got a child and you know their type, you know their astrology, you know their numerology, you've really got, you know, a good handle on being able to nurture that child according to their psyche?
You undoubtedly do. I wanted to try to find a connection between astrology and the Enneagram, and I teamed up with an astrologer, but unfortunately we were unable to do so. I know it's there, I just haven't figured it out yet, because I don't know enough about astrology, because everything in the universe is interrelated, so there must be connections, there must be, you know, certain types display certain types of astrological. But it would be more complicated than just being a Piscean or Virgo or something. So I do believe there is a connection.
You do workshops on this. You teach people, you know, advanced and students, etc. What sort of responses have you seen in families? What sort of transformations just from knowing this information?
Huge understanding. You know, I think of one family who couldn't understand their son. With them, there was a lot of that get up and go seven energy. And they had this introvert who didn't want to do anything, he just wanted to sit in his room and read up on stuff. And so they made him wrong. And so he felt inadequate. He felt that he was letting the family down. But being in social situations just overwhelmed him completely. So he was torn between trying to please the parents and the family and trying to feel that he sort of fitted in, and his own needs, which was actually, people exhaust me, I need time to sort of charge my batteries on my own. When the parents understood that he was a five, it made a huge difference, not only to them, but also to him, because suddenly he wasn't wrong. Suddenly he wasn't odd. Suddenly he was just a five being a five, and fives can be very eccentric. And so it brings about understanding within the family dynamic, and that goes a long way towards helping us to be healthier versions of ourselves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for instance, my son is six, and I didn't realize at the time, but sixes tend to rebel. So my pressurizing him to study had the complete reverse effect.
Mm.
It would have been far better if I'd sat down with him and we'd had a chat about what it meant. If you got a better mark, then he could go to the university he wanted to go to, and so on and so on. That would have got far further than saying, come on, you haven't, get off that, you know, PlayStation and actually do some work here. Very bad approach. Whereas with my daughter, who's a three, perhaps if I had gone to her and said, although both of them have done very well, so somehow I managed, but if I had sort of impressed upon her the maybe chance for success and rewards and recognition and so on, you know, that would have motivated her. I wish I had really gone into this when my children were younger, because I know it would have benefited, you know,
yeah,
all of us at the time.
So let's talk about the other ways that the Enneagram can help us, you know, and the other great pleasures in life, like sex and eating. How can knowing our personal type influence, you know, our food, diet, and exercise choices?
Well, I was reading a book one day, and they were talking about fight or flight being the motivation for weight gain or weight loss. And in reading the book, I thought, but this book is written by a six, because that's what sixes are about, fight or flight, you know. And then I sort of dragged a whole lot of these other books off my shelves. And I realized that each book was written by somebody of a different type. And so their reasons for weight gain were completely different from the other book, another book. And I suddenly realized, so there are all these different reasons why we choose the foods we do, why we put on weight, the exercises we're drawn to, and so on, that are not the same. It's not a one size fits all. So that's what got me interested in that, and realizing that even the way we shop and the way we entertain is very different depending on what type you are. You know, sixes will tend to go back to the same restaurant, order the same food because they like it and it's good. Eights will order big. They'll order the mega portion of whatever because that's who they are. Ones will be inclined to restrict themselves, to order the healthiest option and not to be too extravagant. You know, twos will just dish it out to everyone. They'll have, you know, I remember that she so enjoyed when I made her that stroganoff last time, kind of thing. You know, so it's a very different approach.
Yeah.
And then sexually, I felt that if people understood where they were coming from sexually and what they needed sexually, then that would be a great bridge for their partners to actually understand their needs. And because once again, people's sexual needs differed and what they were looking for differed. And we incline to make everyone the same, and that's not always the case. Everyone has different needs, different desires. So also it became interesting, like nines are the most pansexual for instance, and eights are the most archetypically masculine. That doesn't mean to say that all eights are masculine, not at all, but from an archetypal point of view, there's a different energy that affects sexuality, as does it in all the numbers. And also what prevents us from being present. So for instance, if you're a one, you might be getting ready to have sex and it's all great and what have you, and then you suddenly are lying in bed and then you notice that damn picture skew on the wall, or he or she left their undies lying on the ground. And now that becomes the focus of your attention. Now the whole sexual thing is gone. Because all you're thinking about is picking up those undies or straightening that picture. So for each type, there's a different way that takes them away from being present sexually. And obviously that affects the enjoyment of the sex. Because if somebody having sex with someone and they're there but not there, it's never going to have the same meaning for you.
So what do you make you know, we have so many young people now who are identifying, you know, different genders, you know, the whole gamut. And we didn't have that before because it wasn't safe for them to talk about it. Yeah. But do you feel that there is a, you know, particular number, particular type that is more likely to be amongst that group than another?
Yes, from the perspective that if I think about like fours, for instance, just taking any number, fours are all about discovering the depth of who they are. Who am I really? So they will often explore different personas to get there. They'll often dress in a certain way. Does this feel like me? Well, yes, it did, but maybe it doesn't feel like me today. So maybe I'll try something different, you know. Whereas other types are more rigid in the way they go about it. Whereas sevens say, hey, anything goes. Let's just explore. Let's have freedom. Let's not limit ourselves. You know, eights might be lusty. I don't care if so-and-so is with someone else. I want them and I want them now, you know, and they'll go after them like that. So everyone has a different approach. Which may lean into some of those characteristics or not.
Yeah. You, in Sex and the Enneagram, you look at each type's fantasies as well, which I think must be a great icebreaker, you know, because most people, especially in the early days of relationships, they don't want to share their fantasies. No. But if you know their type, you can work it out for yourself.
But I mean, you know, try sitting down with a bunch of friends and saying, look, I'm writing this book. Could you just share your fantasies with me? Nothing stops a party faster than that. So, yeah, but yes, and I think, you know, once again, it's not, there's not a line drawn in the sand because, as I've said, you know, if you're a one and you're trying to do things the right way, the proper way, follow the rules, it's natural that perhaps some of your fantasies will take you to wild and wonderful places that you kind of are not able to allow yourself to go in real life, so to speak. And if you need to be dominant and in charge, well, it figures that in that scenario, you may want to be dominated. You may want to explore that shadow side of yourself. What's it like when I'm not in charge, when I don't have the power?
Yeah. You know,
so they tend to arise from our fixations, I guess.
Knowing the Enneagram as well as you do, does it, you know, I can just imagine, you know, you at that dinner party saying, you know, I want to know about people's fantasies. You must have known before you'd even say such a thing who was going to say, I'll tell you mine, and who would say, definitely not. So yeah, it does.
The ones who say definitely not are the ones who inbox you later.
Yeah. So
I think we all have a desire to talk about our sexuality, but we don't feel safe to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe in a safe environment, an anonymous safe environment. People are prepared to open up to a degree. And once again, it's a personality type, you know. Maybe the more introverted types find it harder. Although I say that, but fours are very open, you know, because they're very authentic about how they feel and so on. So, yeah, it's it varies, I think, according to the type.
So what areas of life have you found this knowledge to be really useful for you beyond the ones that we've been discussing?
The realization that we're all essentially trapped and we don't realize it, that we're all in love with our fixations and that, you know, so often people say, well, I don't want to be categorized. I don't want to be boxed. And I said, but you've already boxed yourself. The Enneagram is helping you to see what that cage is constructed of so that you can liberate yourself from it. Because essentially, personality and ego are very closely associated. So we're almost like saying, I don't want to change. I want to be bound to this lower potential state of my being. And the Enneagram helps us to see a path that we can grow. I mean, when else do you get something that clearly kind of helps you define how you're holding yourself back, how you're limiting yourself? And then you become, it breeds like, you know, my first books were written all about habits. And it's about how, you know, when we get stressed, everyone has various habits. But in a way, that was the precursor to the Enneagrams, because it's in understanding our habits that we start understanding how we have boxed ourselves in, how we have limited ourselves. And then that brings an awareness, which the Enneagram does, because as a nine, I can now say, okay, am I going into avoidance? Am I becoming stubborn? Am I resisting something because it makes me feel uncomfortable? Am I disappearing into my work because it's a safer place to be than dealing with the world? You know, so you can start asking yourself all those questions. And really then, you know, we disintegrate unconsciously, but we have to be conscious to integrate. So you have to be aware of that behavior in order to transform it. And not to make it wrong, by the way. I mean, just to realize it.
Yeah.
Yes, I can be lazy, but I can also be very active. And somewhere between the two is this transformation where I don't need to be either. It's okay to be busy sometimes and not be busy sometimes.
How many books on the Enneagram have you written?
The 10 Kiddies books series.
And yeah, I would like you to say something about those, because they're quite unique, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the point of them was for younger children, and I'm not trying to get kids to identify themselves as such, but my main objective there is to get children to realize that difference doesn't make it wrong. So because your friend behaves differently or thinks differently or has a different gift to you, doesn't make them wrong. So I'm trying to get kids to get that acceptance. Then I wrote a fun book on cats on the Enneagram called Nine Lives. Yeah, Nine Lives. Then I wrote one on art, because as an artist, I found that interesting, the different approaches that we all have to art, depending on our type. Then I wrote Sex on the Enneagram, Better Parenting with the Enneagram, and the Enneagram of Eating.
I've got to ask you, out of the eating, the parenting, and the sex, which one sold the most?
Okay, you're asking the wrong person, because I'm not very good about these things. It's difficult to say, because they all came out at different times. So obviously, Enneagram of Eating came out first, so that would theoretically have sold more copies than Sex, which came out a couple of years later, and Parenting, which came out a couple of years later than that. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to say, because if they didn't all come out at the same time.
Are you going to write any more?
You know, I've been on a bit of a transformational journey this yeah, I've got very into wildlife and photography and going out into the desert and doing my thing. So I've got some ideas, but I'm not sure that I will write another book at this stage. Articles, yes. I don't know. I'm keeping my options open.
Good. And Gad, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you for having me on the show, and I hope you're all going onto the websites and looking at Enneagrams now, finding out more.
Oh, before we go, please tell people where they can do the test.
Best to either contact me directly, info@enneagrams9paths.com, and the nine is a numerical nine, or go onto my website, enneagrams9paths.com. And then I'll lead you from there, because there are lots of free versions on the internet that are very good. But you can do more in-depth ones as well.
Thank you, Anne. Okay, so Better Parenting with the Enneagram, Nine Types of Children and Nine Types of Parents, is published by Inner Traditions Bear and Company, from whom you can also purchase Sex and the Enneagram and the Enneagram of Eating. For more information about Anne Gadd's art, books and workshops for beginners and advanced students, visit her website at Anne Gadd, that's two N's and two D's, .co.za. And you can learn more about the Enneagram and do your quiz at https://enneagrams9paths.com. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'll be back with another edition of What Is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me, and thank you again to Anne Gadd.
Thank you.